Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 127, Vanderbilt Commodores Football Preview, recorded Wednesday, August 13th, 2014. Tonight, Shane Bailey is joined by Nick Jones and Nick Thomas to look at the Commodores. What does Mason bring in his first year on West End? Can the defense adjust to the new look 3-4? What does the wait to name a starting QB say about Vandy's offense? The roundtable looks at these questions and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Back in our SEC preview weeks, we are doing day three this week. We are back to the East. I told you we'd be heavy East this week, so we are back over there to do the Vanderbilt Commodores. Got a couple folks joining me tonight. Nick Jones from Bama Hammers back again. Nick, you're almost a regular. I think you are a regular. We'll give you that title now. Welcome aboard. Welcome back.
I'm getting pretty close, right?
Yes. You and Blair are my staples there, so I appreciate you being on.
Always.
And then we've got somebody brand new to the roundtable tonight for a Vanderbilt perspective, and we like to get somebody that's a fan of that program on when we're talking about them. We're going to stay with the Knicks. This time it's Nick Thomas. Welcome, Nick. Thanks for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Shane. Excited to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Now, you even sported your colors tonight. I love that. That's the dedication that you get when you do this show.
Well, when you see the history we've had as a Vanderbilt fan, you need to take advantage of any opportunity to wear the apparel.
You can always tout that you're the national champions in baseball, right?
That's right. That's right. Let's not forget.
Some people already have.
Yeah, football seems to reign true in the South, no doubt.
Yeah, some people go, there's college baseball?
What?
But we are a fan-centric podcast. We do talk mostly from a fan's perspective. But during our previews, we break down every team, and we look at them. We look at some of the pros and cons and just have a discussion on where we think they're going to end up and kind of look at their schedule. So we're halfway through so far. We've got 2 weeks left till kickoff come tomorrow. So we're getting right around the corner. I mean, we were just talking off air some of this show prep. The SEC Network was kind of previewing some of their stuff on the mothership tonight. Or was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
So, you know, we're getting a sneak peek of what they're going to be bringing forth. They kick off tomorrow. So, you know, we're a preview to what's to come on the SEC Network or not, you know, depending on how well you like what we have to say. But we are an audio or video versions. We do this on YouTube. We have podcasts available for you no matter where you want to listen to a podcast, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, an RSS reader of any sorts. Just go out on the web, look up SEC SRT, and find the way that you want to listen to us, and you're going to probably find us there. Love for you to interact. Tell us what you think. We've gotten some great comments here recently, some not believing what we think, but that's coming from that fan base, and so we kind of expect that, especially you know, when you look at the Arkansas podcast and the Auburn. You know, some of them didn't believe where we were putting Auburn, so... It's fun to get that. So thank you guys for interacting and listening. So we appreciate that. But let's get right into the podcast tonight. I'm going to start with Nick Thomas. What do you think of all the movement that's happened? The new coach, now that he's been here, you're starting to see practices, games just a couple weeks away for you guys. You do start the college football season with a Thursday night game. So you're there faster than anybody. You are 2 weeks and a day from kickoff. You know, what's your expectations with the new coach?
Well, first of all, Shane, it's very interesting because as a Vandy fan, we are in ultra uncharted waters at this point in the game. Coming off of three bowl appearances, 2 9-win seasons, and now a new coaching staff who comes well represented with a plethora of experience, you really have to wonder how Coach Mason's defensive coordinator strategy is going to pay out as the head coach, as the CEO of the program. They've got a ton of talent coming back. I'll tell you, you know, all those freshmen, those highly left-sided freshman that Franklin brought in. He redshirted last year, so we don't really know what we're going to get. I heard him mention today on an interview that he's got so much talent. He thinks he's got as much talent as Stanford, but the question is, it's so unproven. We don't know what that talent's going to translate to on the field. So as far as expectations goes, my gosh, look at where we are. We have no clue. We don't even have a starting quarterback. We do have some great news in that we've whittled it down from 6 prospects down to 3. But I tell you, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, I'm from the pessimistic side, and I take that from almost every school that I look at and have looked at so far this year. There's lots of changes. You talk about the quarterback change. I think we were doing, again, some more show prep, and you're kind of giving us your thoughts there. Elaborate a little more on what you're thinking there. Do you think Rivers is going to step in and be that guy? Do you think McCrary is going to be the guy? I think you were talking about him being a little erratic. Or is Robinette going to, the one with the most game experience at Vanderbilt, be the guy?
Well, from the 6 people that came in, we had 2 true freshmen in Stankavich, who was, I think, a 3-star that came in, and Freeback. Freeback looks to be the long-term solution for Vanderbilt. He's a tall guy, great arm strength, throws a great ball. He just stopped picking up the offense. So they're probably going to get redshirted. Then you look at Grady. Grady's a junior that's been there. He was a wide receiver when he came in, but wanted to move to quarterback. And now he got lost on the depth chart. So in the last week, he's decided to move back over to wide receiver, which we'll talk about wide receiver position later in the show. But that leaves the 2 returning quarterbacks in Johnny McCrary and Patton Robinette, and then the transfer in from LSU, he's a junior, Stephen Rivers, who ironically, for those that don't know, is Rivers' quarterback from San Diego. Rivers' brother from San Diego.
Phillip Rivers.
Phillip Rivers, thank you. My gosh, I haven't done my fantasy football league draft, so that's why I'm not that back up to speed.
I don't draft him anyways, so.
it's a principle. But when you look at the 3 right now, I think Rivers comes in with having the most SEC experience because he's a junior. But then you've got Patton, who really led the Commodores to having a great year last year when Carter Samuels went down with wins over Georgia and over Tennessee.
He had that big comeback. He had a big comeback from behind win in his first start, did he not?
Was that Georgia? Was that the Georgia game?
I believe it was.
Yeah, that was an amazing game. Now, the fact of the matter is, we know the SEC was down last year, but that still gave Patton some great experience. The question marks you have for Patton is, 1, can he make good decisions? And 2, does he have the arm strength to throw the wide receiver routes? And that's just a big question mark, and I don't know that those questions have been answered. Which takes us over to Johnny McCrary. Now, Johnny McCrary is a redshirt freshman coming off of his redshirt year, obviously, and he has the most skills of the 3 that are remaining. He can make plays with his legs. He's got a heck of an arm. But the question mark remains is, can he make good decisions? He can make the plays, but can he protect the ball? And in Mason's offense, Mason is looking for somewhat of a game manager at this point in the game. Someone that's not going to beat himself and put the team in bad situations. So,
does AJ McCarron have any eligibility left? He's a game manager, right? Sorry, that was a bad joke, I guess.
Directed at Nick. Well, I will tell you, as it sits right now, I think it's completely up for grabs. I think everyone in the Vandy community is pulling for McCrary. But I think it's going to be a toss-up. He's looking to make an announcement as to who the quarterback's going to be probably a week before the Temple game, which is ironically 2 weeks from tomorrow.
It's always nice to be going, into the season having a quarterback battle with 3 guys splitting time with the first team. That's got to be a difficult thing to have as far as a team and gelling. And you really want that person – by now figured out and running 80-90% of those first team reps. especially with the overall inexperience you've got at quarterback. To me, that's an area of concern for me. If I were a Vanderbilt fan, is that we really need to have this figured out sooner than later, because once the game start, it's going to be even harder to get that figured out.
Well, I completely agree with that. The good news for us is not just that, you know, we've got three competent, what seems to be somewhat competent quarterbacks vying for the position, but we're returning our offensive line, which should allow enough protection for them. The only person we lost was an All-SEC, Wesley Johnson, and all the rest of our offensive lines coming back. So we've got good depth, we've got good experience from the offensive line, which should allow whomever a significant amount of protection.
Now, are you moving somebody over to that left tackle position, or is somebody brand new coming into that? Do you know?
Well, I know last year, I don't know specifically who's going to be making that transition. I do know that everyone that's going to be starting this year has started at least one game for the Commodores on the offensive line in the past.
Okay. So if you've got a quarterback that you don't know what you have or who it is, are you going to rely on that run game then?
Well, if you look at historically, last year, Vandy had a really nice running game. With Jerron Seymour, he came out. And if you look at last year's stats, he was tied for number one with T.J. Yates in most touchdowns. So So with that being said, we've got a good production on the ground with Seymour returning. We've got several strong running backs coming into the fold, with Ralphriel Webb making a strong appearance as a freshman. We've got obviously Jerron Seymour, Dallas Rivers. He's probably going to end up getting redshirted. But the Brian Kimbrough, Jerron Seymour connection is really going to play a big role, I think, in on what our success looks like. I think Mason's offense looks to ground and pound, maybe some swing passes out of the backfield. And our goal, what I would anticipate, would be to get Kimbrough the ball in open space. And we should have a good tandem at the running back position.
Nick Jones, you got anything you want to throw in real quick? I got something else, but I know I've left you out for a minute. So you got anything you want to throw in there?
No, I think you guys are very right. I think Mason's kind of going to probably pick the guy that makes the least mistakes, especially with Temple coming out of the gate. You've got a little bit of playing room, but you're going to have to make a pretty quick determination on who you're going to put in there when you've got Ole Miss coming up. And, you know, we've already done our Ole Miss podcast and we think they're going to be just as good or better than last year. But I think it's great to have options at this point in the season. Like you said, Shane, I mean, having three guys that are, you know, vying for the same position that can compete, you've got to kind of think that each person is going to get a little bit better. And hopefully after that first game, or, you know, maybe even before that first game, you're going to have somebody shine through.
Gentlemen, what would you say at this point in the game, 2 weeks ahead, that the coaching staff needs to establish, this is my starting quarterback, to get them the most reps in practice as possible?
Which one?
Who would you say, at what point do you think a decision needs to be made?
Yesterday.
See, I don't know if I totally agree with that, because, I mean, I've seen, which, I mean, it varies from program to program. Obviously, I'm going to relate to the team I know, but a lot of people forget that A.J. McCarron and a guy in Phillip Sims, who I think we can all agree, you know, didn't have really the talent or the upside of what A.J. McCarron eventually became, you know, as a three-time national champion and now NFL quarterback, and they battled it out to the third game of the season. I mean, I think that, and you can draw some comparisons, because Vandy does have a pretty strong run game that they can rely on. You've got a whole returning offensive line, essentially. You know, even the guy that they're going to plug in there has at least one start, like Nick said. So I don't know. I think you have to have a solid guy by week two at Ole Miss, and I think you probably start nudging, you know, at least two guys, maybe even that one guy, to having more first-team reps. But I don't think there's too much of an issue heading into this Temple game with, you know, two guys that you're still not sure of. Because, I mean, let's be honest, competing on the field in a game is totally different than in practice. Even though you want everybody going 100%, you know, with tenacity and intensity in practice, it's still totally different on the field.
No, you got people that just step up at a game time, and you can't see that in practice. But here's the one thing that's different in this scenario, Nick Jones, than the scenario you just gave me in Alabama. Nick Saban was already there.
That's true.
He had an offense.
Makes a total difference.
He had an offense that was implanted. They knew what that system was because they'd been working on it the year before and the year before that. What is Derek Mason installing as far as the offense? It's a new offense. There is going to be new wrinkles, new things that have to be learned, new cadences, new calls, all these different changes that a new head coach comes in and makes. So all the things that A.J. McCarron and who were you saying was fighting it out? Sims. Fighting it out. Well, they were fighting out for something they were already – they had the books last year, and they understood where they were going with that. This is a whole new system. So there's all those other added wrinkles that you have when you add a new coach. Not to mention that, yeah, the offense is great, but let's switch to the other side of the ball. You know, if I'm remembering correctly, Mason's switching that whole defensive philosophy. They're going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And you always hear about a coaching change in the NFL when they make that change, that they don't have the right talent on the field to make that work. Well, this is college. You have less of a talent pool to choose from on the collegiate level than you do in the NFL. These are elite players at the NFL level. And while you're in the SEC and you're 3- and 4-star star recruits, you might not be best suited for that. How well can Mason make that switch to the defense? If they've got a defense that can't stop the ball and be effective like they need to be in this 3-4, now all of a sudden you're looking at a defense that's given up lots of points, and all of a sudden you've got to rely on an offense with an unstable quarterback that you don't know. You're putting a lot of pressure on the offensive side of the ball, no matter how good that offensive line is, no matter how good that running game is. That's where my concern is with Vanderbilt. And next year might be a whole other story because you've got that year, but that switch from a 4-3 to a 3-4 is extremely difficult in the NFL. You're wanting to implement that in the collegiate level in a year and be effective. And as Derek Mason says at Media Days, compete for an SEC title.
Well, I'll tell you, Shane, first of all, thank you for not smirking when you said compete for an SEC title.
I did hold back the laugh.
I agree with you. You know, as a Vandy fan, the scariest thing I see going in is what is that 3-4 transition going to look like? Now, we've got a really strong defensive line and some great, very talented athletes coming in our secondary and at linebacker. They moved Azubuike, who's one of our strongest pass rushers. They moved him and Westman from defensive end to outside linebacker. So they're going to be looking to rush the passer with their hand in the ground and standing up. And that's going to be interesting to see. Can you take someone who's used to just pinning their ears back and rushing the passer to reading offenses, coverage, and picking up, and frankly, catching a running back cutting across the middle? That's scary. I look at what happened with Tennessee, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and, man, I'm really anxious to see how this season pans out. The good news is they've got Kutluski, who's came in as the defensive coordinator. He's the one that taught Coach Mason the 3-4 at Ohio, and I think his nickname is the godfather of the 3-4. And so hopefully he's got this thing down to how he can teach and educate and get players to react and respond without thinking. But that's going to be the scariest thing as a Vanderbilt fan.
That's the key, you said, to react without thinking, to know what's going to happen and be able to adjust. That's a big change for some of these linemen that are switching to linebackers. I mean, now once this does take place, I think overall the way the 3-4 can defend against this pass-happy, hurry-up offense, you've got better options and you're going to be better prepared. But that's a big unknown for me as far as when I look at Vanderbilt. If you want to say, hey, Shane, what is your biggest concern about Vanderbilt and their success this season? It's living and dying switching to the 3-4. How fast can they do it? Do they? And I haven't heard. Do they plan on just all out, we're all a 3-4? Are they going to mix in some 4-3 with the old packages to try to have some comfort level? Or are they going to just say, nope, it's a whole new ball game. This is the way we're doing it going forward?
Well, Mason's known, from my understanding, in mixing up his defenses. So while apparently they're going to run a base 3-4, look to have a combination of different setups and different alignments for that defensive line, those linebackers. And I look at part of his adjustment and part of what he's going to offer is confusion from the defensive line and the linebackers to not letting the quarterback know what defense they're in. And hopefully that'll allow somewhat of an advantage to make up for the transition going forward. I'm very thankful we've got Temple at the start off the year to kind of get some of these some of the rust off and get into better practice with the 3-4. But I'm very nervous about the Ole Miss game on that second week.
Yeah, I would be definitely nervous with that. And the one thing that you've got to there's a number of things you can credit Franklin with, even though he left. I would say not unexpectedly, but it was a long, drawn-out process for him to leave.
Yeah.
But one of the things he did was set Vanderbilt up to be successful long-term. And he did that through his scheduling as well. He understood the fact that for Vanderbilt to go to the bowl game, they needed to have 4 winnable non-conference games. And so setting those up has really helped Vanderbilt. You've got the one at the end of the year. Do you still have Wake Forest? I haven't even.
Oh, let's see.
No, you don't.
I believe we've. No, we've got.
Even dropped that game off of your schedule, so it's even more winnable.
That's right.
Looking at those type of situations, so you've pretty much assured yourself those 4 wins. Now you've got to find 2 more wins in the SEC, and so that's the good thing. That one of the good things I think Franklin's done, and by kicking off with Temple. Which is different because last year you kicked off with Ole Miss.
We kicked off on a Thursday night, and it was the first SEC game of the year. And it was a great game. Unfortunately, we lost in the closing minutes of the game, a 75-yard touchdown run just after we took the lead. So hopefully we can bounce back this year and get a little revenge. That game, by the way, is being played at LP Field, home of the Titans. On a quote-unquote neutral side, even though it is here in Nashville.
Yeah, where is Blair? Because he was all about that. Was it Monday night?
Yeah, we talked about that for what, like 10 minutes or more?
Yeah, we talked about that. Our Blair, our Mississippi State guy, talked heavily about that from Vanderbilt's perspective. And we can kind of go into the schedule unless there's anything from them that you're the team that you want to talk about before we kind of look at their schedule and what we think that's going to look like. Either Nick, anything?
Go ahead, Nick Jones.
Well, I was just going to say one more thing. I thought it was very interesting that you bring up the move from a guy that, generally played defensive end to moving to that outside linebacker position, and we've seen that at Alabama in a lot of pro-style defenses that run the 3-4 is you kind of have to have that hybrid guy. Now, it's very hard to develop him if you didn't recruit him for that position, but you look at a guy like Courtney Upshaw and a guy like Michael Sam, these athletic defensive ends that can – they're really linebackers, but can, sit there and put their hand down in a 4-3 situation to provide pressure without having to bring a blitz. And these simple wrinkles that a lot of people take for granted in a system that's developed like Kirby Smart's, and I think we all three realize that Mason's a guy that made it work. I mean, he, consistently had some amazing defenses at Stanford, recruited some great players, even to the high caliber academic standards that they require, which was, simply impressive. But I'm not sure. I'm kind of with Shane. I think Vanderbilt's biggest limiting factor this year is even though they have these 3 and 4 stars that Franklin has done such a great job of recruiting over the years, that I'm not sure that they don't have the right style of athlete for the 3-4, but I think it's a pretty big adjustment. But the good thing is that Mason is known for running these hybrid style defenses, so they don't technically have to, live or die by the 3-4. I mean, you've got to have a base that you go out of, but, you could run a 4-3 for 70% of the game and, make it work.
No, I completely agree. It's, it's going to be iffy. I think a lot of people do have confidence in Mason. It's just how quickly can he implement the system. Thankfully, Franklin did 2 things, left us in 2 good positions. One, with the scheduling. He did a great job on the scheduling. Secondly, the cupboard is definitely not bare from a Vanderbilt perspective. And so as we go forward and look at the talent pool that Mason has to work with, it's pretty deep. It's as deep as it's ever been at Vanderbilt. Now, that's not to say how it would compare with the Alabamas or the Floridas or the Texas A&Ms. But nevertheless, we're in as best of as good of a position as we could possibly be going into this transition. And I think a lot of the Vandy fans are just looking for somewhat of a stability at this point in the game, going into the year, making the transition as painless as possible. And I think the future looks really bright for next year and the year after with the talent pool we've got coming in. But with that, let's go ahead and look at the scheduling, Shane.
I want to ask one more question that you made me think of as you said that. As Franklin departed, it was right at National Signing Day, or just shy of that, and all of a sudden there was an exodus that happened at Vanderbilt. I know that Mason has tried to do some things to get some of that back. You talk about the depth and all the red shirts that Franklin was able to do last year, so the cupboard is not bare. But how well was he able to fill those gaps from the recruiting standpoint for those incoming guys? What kind of talent pool was he able to bring in there at the last minute?
Well, if you go back and look at the recruiting trends from Franklin at the end of last year, by all accounts, it looks like he probably stopped recruiting sometime in November. And at that point, most of the guys that committed from that point forward absolutely followed him to Penn State. I think we lost a total of six, if I'm not mistaken, to Penn State. So, man, it was very painful. With the short time that, that Coach Mason had to come in, gather the team, gather the troops, identify need, evaluate talent from his perspective on what he saw as the potential for his system, he did a very nice job in salvaging the class. We had a four-star Nifai Laleo, who is a defensive lineman. He may be playing the nose position for us this year. He's at 315 pounds already. He's a freshman. He's got to learn the system, but at that position, he's just going to be looking to put his ears back and rush and clog up the middle. But that being said, he did a nice job of regrouping the troops, filling the spots, and having a full class for the recruiting, which was just, I think it was less than 6 weeks from the time he started to National Signing Day.
All right. So it's not as dire as it looked like at National Signing Day then.
He pulled a rabbit out of a hat with some of those recruits. Nephi is a high four-star that was committed to Stanford. He pulled him all across the country to Nashville. We've got Sheffield, who was a top-tier defensive back, cover corner, and we've got him in. So we've got some strong prospects moving forward. Is it what we would ultimately want out of the rating system? It's not, but considering the situation we're in, we're very happy with it.
Good. I would think he would be able to pull from the west side some of those Stanford recruits that he possibly was talking too hot and heavy before he moved over.
Well, we didn't pull too many of those. However, I think we have found a slight loophole in the system, and not many people know about this, but apparently there's a marginal difference between Stanford academic requirements for athletes versus the Vanderbilt. And so there is a small window there for college athletes that can't get into Stanford but can get into Vanderbilt. And so it looks like Coach Mason's really going to use that to our advantage in pulling kids across the country. He had another hire with his linebackers coach, and that's Coach Mele. He's from Utah State. He's of Polynesian descent, and between the two of them, they're doing a nice job of recruiting from the islands out west.
There you go. So it's not as hard to get into Vanderbilt as one thought.
As Stanford, absolutely. As Stanford. I mean, I can't get in, let's just be honest. But it looks like they're pulling a lot. They're actually, if you look at the prospect list for the 2015 class, you'll see that they are in the hunt for a couple of guys that are being recruited heavily by Stanford, UCLA, USC, and Oregon. And for us to be mentioned in those circles for a recruit and even get official visits all the way across the country is pretty amazing at this point in the game, especially in such a short order for how long Mason's been on staff.
Well, let's now switch gears to where you were wanting to go and take a look at the schedule. I think we all agree that there's no reason to look much past this Temple game. I think we're all going to say that that's a game that Vanderbilt will win. They should win and will win.
Agreed.
Yep, agreed.
But then, you know, the following week, like you said, they call it a neutral field, but it's a home game for Vanderbilt in that it's being held at LP Field. By location only is what we've talked about, how this is going to be a home game. Hosting Ole Miss, and you know, that's what we talked about Monday. If you weren't able to listen to that podcast, Ole Miss travels well, and there's a large contingent of Ole Miss fans in the Nashville area. So all of a sudden, you went from a 40-seat stadium to, what, 67,000 at LP Field,
right.
I think is the number. So you just gave an extra 27,000 seats on top of the already, you know, 20,000 that they normally get at a Vanderbilt stadium or more for Ole Miss fans. You know, what was the athletic director thinking by scheduling this game? I mean, they don't need the money.
Well, you know, that was, as a Vandy fan, that was my first question. Why on earth did we make this decision? And if you look at it, it was promised of these kids, from what I'm everything I'm hearing, that they would play on an NFL field this year. And so that was number one. That was promised. It's the downside is that with that 67,000 seat stadium, it's probably going to be about 25,000 Vandy fans, and you know the rest, 32,000 Ole Miss fans at best. And yes, it is a neutral field, and yes, it is in Nashville, home of Vanderbilt. But you'll see that Ole Miss contingency just follow suit and just fill that stadium. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is for Vanderbilt. I know Vanderbilt takes a lot of criticism for not having the significant fan base, and probably rightfully so. But if you look at the fact that we're a private school, you look at the fact that we haven't had state funding to get kids in and develop that fan base through student activity and students coming to class over the last 30, 40 years. And it's been 5,000, 7,000 a pop, and then they're dispersed all over the world. It's no wonder we don't have in Nashville a strong fan base to pull to fill that stadium every week over week.
I'm glad you said that, because that's a broke record for this podcast. When we talk about some of the issues with Vanderbilt, especially when Franklin was here, you know, calling students' parents on fall break to try to get them to stay longer. You know, the biggest issue Vanderbilt has, and tell me if I'm from an outsider that lives in Nashville, tell me if I'm viewing this correctly. The problem with Vanderbilt is, like you said, most of the students don't live here. So when they graduate, they don't stay here. They go somewhere else. On top of that, Nashville is a huge SEC melting pot. So there are all these other SEC schools, alumni, that come to Nashville to live and work after they graduate, whether they're from Nashville or that they lived in some other area and they came to Nashville for all the opportunities that Nashville now affords them. So now all of a sudden, you don't have the alumni here. You've got fans from other universities that live here that support their team. How do you grow a fan base? So it was a complete uphill battle from the very beginning, and for some reason Franklin thought he could change that, and he did bring excitement to Vanderbilt, but it was very exciting to watch West End and what all he was able to do, and hopefully Mason can continue to do that, because they did bring us an exciting level to Vanderbilt, but that is an inherent issue with Vanderbilt University that's not going to change.
No. I couldn't agree with you more. I think the big issue is you just have to understand who you are and understand that we're not a state university. We're not getting state funding. We're not pulling kids out of the, you know, from the local high schools, getting a scholarship to come to our universities. It's a national university that's going to pull from all over. Now, with that being said, could they do a better job at marketing to those kids that are growing up to build it as Nashville's team? Nashville's team, possibly. I think they should be doing a better job of that and just getting the word out, recruiting these local kids. We've got one kid locally out of Pearl Cone, Keyshawn Vaughn, that they're heavily pursuing. But they're also pursuing a couple other running backs in Gillespie. And my thought is, why not put all your eggs in that local basket and push hard just to get the local buy-in and develop that momentum? But, you know, I think Mason and his staff are looking at making this a national team and not just one for Nashville or Tennessee for that matter. But I don't know that you can turn it into where we're pulling 65,000, 70,000 fans week over week. I mean, my gosh, right now we're having problems filling up a 45,000 seat stadium.
Now, with that being said, let's go back to the game. Do you think you have a chance?
I think at Ole Miss, we've got a chance. The fact that it's so early scares me because I don't know how that 3-4 is going to respond. I don't know how our quarterback is going to respond. I've got it down here as a 50-50 just because that game is always a really good game. But I it wouldn't surprise me in the least to have a loss.
Nick, this is, we cover this on Ole Miss, so what do you think?
Yeah, you know, and just to emphasize it more on the Vandy side, I know we've talked a lot about the transitional style of defense, but I think this is a very tough game to have as your first game out of the gate in conference play, second game of the year, when you're still in a transitional style of defense. I mean, Ole Miss does a lot of things on the offensive side of the ball that can be hard to track, hard to follow, and like we talked about earlier, if you don't have these guys that are so ready and confident in the system that they know exactly where to be, you know, without having to have plays called in, if they can adjust to the audibles that Ole Miss is going to throw at them and all the swing passes and everything else, it could be bad. I don't really know what that looks like, and granted, it is, you know, early season for Ole Miss too, but as we've said, they've got a lot of offensive weapons, and I'm not sure that Vandy exactly matches up with their athleticism. But at the same time, I thought that about Alabama last year as well. I thought there was a time that Ole Miss could sneak up on Alabama. You know, Alabama's, you know, known for having slower defensive linemen and things like that. Alabama shut them out. So it's really going to come down to Ole Miss's offense versus Vandy's transitional defense. And at this point, in from what I know, and granted I'm not a huge expert on Vandy, but I'm going to, you know, slate this down as a loss, but I think Nick made a good point in saying that this game has been consistently close throughout the Franklin years, and that could continue with the same players that Franklin's recruited and hopefully, from a Vanderbilt's perspective, a good defensive coach in Derek Mason.
Yeah, and I'm going to second that to say that, you know, that's the only chance Vanderbilt has, is that this Ole Miss rivalry has been crazy, especially the last 5 years or so. Some tremendous finishes on both sides of the ball. You never know who's going to win that game going forward. I will say, though, we're talking about a defense that needing to find itself, coming into the second game of the season being an SEC game, a team that in some instances might even compete for an SEC West title if the chips can fall the right way, and they have the most experienced quarterback in the SEC. Those are not good things to be going up against if you're Vanderbilt. And I can't even if it is a home game for them, I can't give them that win. So
no, I don't disagree with that at all, Shane and Nick. I think that, you know, this game scares me. I want to be optimistic, but by the same token, this early in the season in that transition, I would put it down as a loss just for all the reasons you guys mentioned, but I'm going to hope for the best.
See, this is where we as a podcast as whole and all the people we have on there are different than the folks that'll call into like a Feinbaum show, because they're going to believe no matter what, they're going to win this game. I mean, if this was Paul Feinbaum's show right now, we would not have anybody disagree. Everybody would be disagreeing and saying that there's no way that we're going to lose this game if we're Vanderbilt.
Well, you got to let me rattle off as if I'm the lady that called in the show the other day.
Tammy?
Says, I talked to Coach I don't know what her name was, but I talked to Coach Mason, and he's got these boys ready to play. They're going to come out. They're going to be ready to hit. They're going to be ready to tackle. They're going to be ready to run the ball, and it's going to be great. And they're going to win. They're going to beat them 45-0. I just guarantee it. I guarantee it. You just wait and see.
That's what – yeah. But we're not that person. We understand where our weaknesses lie as far as when we are fans of our own team. So that's encouraging to hear from you, Nick.
Anything for you, Shane. You know that.
I appreciate that. So the good news is, though, you get to follow that up. Man, you've got just you're homebound, aren't you? You turn around and play another home game with Massachusetts. I'm going to give you that win.
Yes. Yeah, we like to play in warm weather, so we want to go ahead and front load our home schedule. But yeah, UMass, I think, is definitely a win.
I mean, if you look, you don't travel far at all, really. Realistically, your whole season's pretty close. After that, you follow right back up with another hard game at hosting South Carolina. So that's your fourth home game in a row.
Right. And there's no question. South Carolina should be competing for an East championship this year. And I don't think we're at that level anywhere close at this point to compete with that. But certainly that will be a great barometer for us to find out where we stand in that pecking order.
Nick Jones.
Yeah, I think that's a good, interesting point that Nick just made, is the fact that these games, you know, although they may not be winnable from a Vanderbilt standpoint, in the fourth game of the year, you're hoping that you have a solid quarterback, you know, pick now. He's kind of grown into it with two games against teams that you expect to, you know, get wins against. And a tough South Carolina team, you know that, you know, Steve Spurrier is going to have them ready. They're going to have a dynamic offense, a pretty solid defense, even though they lose Jadeveon Clowney. And, you know, this might be a game that, although this is kind of cliched, but you look for small victories in this game. You know, if you were able to hold, you know, South Carolina to maybe 20 to 25 points on with them scoring and you know, lose by 10 or 15, I mean, that would be a solid improvement for me. And, you know, it might be good. A lot of times we talk about teams that are hopefully catching an undeveloped team early in the season, like we talked about ad nauseum last year with LSU playing Auburn and getting that win. As Vandy goes along down this schedule, I think we're going to see the team grow. I think the defensive issues are going to get hashed out in some respects. And, you know, this might be one of these games by the end of the year you kind of say, well, maybe if we would have played South Carolina the second-to-last game, or maybe where you're playing Mississippi State or even the last game in Tennessee, it might have been a better, you know, outcome for Vanderbilt.
So after,
I think the real question – go ahead.
No, go on, Nick.
I think the real question for me is how are we going to respond to the running game at South Carolina? They've got that great return, that great running back coming back. And are we going to be able to stop the run in the 3-4? Because my understanding is on that 3-4, that lane coverage and staying in your zone and making sure you can stop that run when you're all spread out. If we're able to do that, what that looks like, or are we going to get gashed? And that's going to be a real concern on how we respond in that game.
I'm going to – I don't have anything else to add to that. It's going to be – I love the way you called that. This is a barometer game for you. It's going to let you know where you stand. I don't see a way you win this game, but like Nick said, can you be competitive? Can you have some internal victories with certain things to show that you have improved and that you're headed in the right direction? So, and I'll say your ship headed in the right direction, to use a Commodore pun there.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well done.
Thank you. So, I'm going to give you 2-2. I think we're all in agreement there. But then I'm going to, I love to be able to say that Kentucky's got a chance to beat you. It is at Kentucky. The Wildcats are going to be improved off of last year's season, going 0-8 in the SEC. I don't think there's still a win. This is one if Kentucky, from a Kentucky side of the ball, you know, if there's something we can sneak in and win, it's still somewhat early in the season for you guys. So we've got a team that's a lot of players back, a system that another year into a second system. We saw improvements throughout the season last year, Kentucky. It's a game I'd like to say we could win But similar to you with Ole Miss, you know, there's a chance, but I'm not going to give it to them. So I'm going to give Vanderbilt the win there.
Well, this is yet another barometer game for us coming back from the opposing position of South Carolina. You know, we're not certainly not going to be favored against South Carolina. We're going to be playing uphill. We're going to be a real test from that perspective. But then going against Kentucky, how can we respond when we're not the underdog? How can we respond when we've got the target on our back? And that's going to be interesting to see how they recover from the South Carolina game just a week before, because they're probably going to be sore. They're probably going to be really all the way in the trenches of the SEC schedule. And so how is that going to look? How are they going to respond? How are they going to recover from that?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest determining factor in this game is, you know, if Vanderbilt ended up dropping this game, it might be something that, I mean, obviously they're separate games, but you may be able to blame or look back to the South Carolina game and say, hey, we got roughed up or we had a tough time transitioning into this game. But, Shane, I'm kind of with you. I mean, Kentucky, I'm still not sure. They're at a place now where they can make this game competitive. But if we're looking to get Vanderbilt bowl eligible, which I am, I think this is a game they have to pick up. And I think many Vanderbilt fans will definitely be disappointed if they lose this game. I mean, this is, you know, the side of the barometer that you don't want to see. This is kind of the opposite of the South Carolina game, where you want to hopefully, you know, win this game outright and be able to notch your first SEC victory.
Yeah, but depending on how bad Kentucky starts off, this could easily be a two touchdown spread for Vanderbilt coming into this game in Lexington.
But yeah, in addition to that, if you look at last year, we came in as a strong favorite and we won the game on the last second field goal here in Nashville, and that was on a good year that we were having. You know, candidly, I'm very concerned about this because I don't know how. After the Ole Miss UMass game in South Carolina, are we going to be looking to make a quarterback change? Are we going to test the waters with a new quarterback?
Great point.
I don't know. There's a lot of new things could happen, and not a lot of new situations. And certainly, we don't know about injuries. But coming off of a strong South Carolina team, certainly those are all things we need to consider.
All right, Nick Jones, you want to start us off with turning around, going down to Georgia to play in Athens?
Yeah, you know, this is a tough three-game stretch if you look at this. I mean, even though Kentucky, you hope, is a winnable game, a must-win for Vandy, but there's still a lot of that pressure that we've talked about coming in as the favorite and then having to travel to Georgia the next week is going to be very tough. You know, Georgia's going to be in the mix for this SEC East Championship. I think I've said in the last couple of podcasts that South Carolina is my favorite, but, I mean, you look at, you know, what Nick talked about earlier, with that running game, if, you know, somebody like South Carolina gashes you up, I'd hate to see what Todd Gurley and, you know, Georgia's offensive line is going to do to you. I mean, they do have a question mark at the quarterback, you know, and a lot of, you know, several question marks in my mind on offense, but that defense will probably be solid yet again. And this is a game I can't really give to Vandy. Another barometer game. I mean, we're probably going to say that a lot, but, you know, this is a game that if you keep it close in the first half or you know, hold Gurley to around 100 yards or even under, you might consider this a moral victory, I guess. If I mean, obviously, that's not something that you want to say. But Georgia's going to be tough this year, and Vandy's going to have a hard time beating him. So it's a loss in my book.
Nick, with all due respect, as a Vandy fan, we have barred the term moral victory from our vocabulary.
That's what I figured.
With that being said, you're giving them a loss, though, right, Nick Thomas?
Yes, unfortunately, I am.
And I will as well. But, you know, good news is you come back home. So you get a two-game stretch on the road with a win and a loss. But then you get to come home and host Charleston Southern, and I'm going to give you another win.
Well, yeah, we'll need that for recovery. To kind of get our stand back up straight and get our game face on. We'll need all the help we can get after that three-game streak to get healthy, get back to the fundamentals, and kind of get our legs back under us.
So then we're going to go to Missouri. Oh, looks like you got a week off before Missouri. So
we do. October 18th is a bye week, and then October 25th we were at Missouri.
That's a really good thing for you guys, because like Nick said, you know, the Kentucky game is a game you have to win. There's two other games that you could really flip-flop from and have a chance and to get bowl eligible, and that's this game or Tennessee. And Missouri, you know, by indications, are still going to be a pretty good program. You know, going to Columbia last year, you saw what that place can look like from an SEC perspective. You know, those fans are true SEC fans. It was loud. It was crazy. It was a fun place to watch a ball game. But you're going to need that second week off to prepare for a team like Missouri. What do you think?
Well, if you look at Matty Mock's return, he is he's a pretty fantastic quarterback. But if you look at how we performed up there 2 years ago when we walked into Columbia and got a win, I don't know how it's going to look this year. At this point, we should have our legs under us after the bye week. We should have our defensive in the 3-4 running much smoother than it was the second week at Ole Miss. And through a passing attack that Missouri's probably going to hit us with. I don't know how the running game is, but we have at this point, our defensive backs and our safeties should start to get their legs under them and should perform fairly well, I would submit.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that I would look at in this game is the fact that Missouri is more like Ole Miss in my mind, as the running game could still be effective for them. But at the same time, it's not this pounding and just relentless run game that you're going to see with a team like Georgia and a team like South Carolina and Mike Davis. So that could help, I think, the development of the 3-4, like you said, or, you know, whatever they end up doing this season. That's going to be a big thing, is, you know, meeting Missouri on the road. I think it could be a very close game. Like you said, you went up there and stole a victory 2 years ago. I don't know. It's something in my mind tells me that they're going to lose this game. Matty Mock returning, I think he is kind of an underrated guy that started several games last year. I think it was four, and led them to a 3-1, record that essentially, I mean, they had to win those games to get to the SEC championship. I mean, that's pretty high-risk games for him to step in, you know, in front of Franklin last year, and he made it happen. I mean, some of those weapons on the outside are gone. BGB's obviously at Oklahoma trying to get eligible. You lose a couple of your other guys. You lose Henry Josie. So with the question marks that Missouri has, and even losing Michael Sam and Coney Ealy on the defensive side of the ball, this could be a very close game. And, Shane, I have really dogged Florida this year. But something tells me that the Florida game being at home in Nashville might be closer than this Missouri game. I have no numbers, no facts to back that up, but I'm really low on Florida this year, so that's my bold prediction of this show.
I like it. Like you guys, I'm going to not like both you guys, but I'm going to add on. I'm going to say that Vanderbilt loses this game as well. But Nick, you know, 2 years ago when they went up there and they stole one and squeaked one out, you know, at that point of the season, Missouri was just riddled with injuries. And we saw what happened to Missouri when they got healthy last year.
Yeah, it was ugly.
And so not only do you have a healthy Missouri, you do have a lot of players leaving, but you have an experienced program, and it is going to be at Columbia. I'm going to give Missouri that win as well.
I think the black and gold are going to win this game. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be the Vanderbilt Commodores.
The black and gold are going to win. I'm just not going to tell you which one.
There you go.
Then you know, here's your next win. I'm going to get you at 5 with the Old Dominion game.
The perennial powerhouse, ODU.
There you go.
Let me just make a point, guys. I mean, Charleston Southern, from what I believe, is not an FBS opponent. And then you've got UMass and Old Dominion that are, I'm sure that we've had some FBS, you know, programs slip in here, but they've went Division I FBS in the last 4 years. So this could be one of the easiest. I mean, you look at, you know, Texas A&M and what they had last year. I mean, they were playing some cupcakes in the non-conference schedule, but in a season that's going to be a transitional period for Vandy, getting acclimated to a new coach, getting acclimated to a new defense, this non-conference schedule definitely does not hurt. We'll just put it that way. And I think if you know, we've got to credit, you know, to our James Franklin for doing this. I mean, you know, we talked about how these schedules are set 3 to 5 years in advance. Pretty impressive with what they have, and I think it's a godsend, especially this season.
And you look at the way, and you look at the way it was scheduled too. You know, you get these. It didn't. You know, some seasons you'll get, I'll get the words out sooner or later, but some seasons you'll see a team where they play all four non-conference games right up front. Right. You know, Franklin right. spattered these four games out throughout the season so that you, after you play an Ole Miss, you get a week off basically before you play South Carolina. Before you play Missouri, you get a week off with Charleston Southern. Before you play Florida, you get a week off with Old Dominion. As far as, you know, just the grind that you can have. Who was it that had the 5-game just brutal stretch that we looked at a couple last week? Was that Auburn who had just that brutal 5-game stretch?
It was either Auburn or Missouri, I think.
And it was just a gauntlet. I mean, it was SEC matchup after SEC matchup after SEC matchup. And so on top of all of those other things that we've just talked about with the scheduling, now he's spattered them in there in such a way that the guys are getting a way to catch their breath, if you want to talk about it, because that will be even more important as you get into this last 3-game stretch where you got to win one of them to be bowl eligible. And Nick seems to think it's this next one at Florida.
I said it's going to be close.
Or no, Florida is at Vandy. I'm sorry.
You know, Nick, I tend to agree with you. I look at what happened in Florida last year, and I know they were riddled with injuries, make no mistake. But when I look at Florida and I see what they put on the field and I see the talent that they've brought in, it's not the historical Florida talent that we've seen over years past. And, you know, there's still a ton of question marks around Muschamp. Obviously, there's a lot of question marks around Mason because he's unproven at this point in the game. But there's a lot telling me that Florida is just not going to – at this point, they're either going to be striving to keep for the SEC championship or the wheels are off at this point in the game for them.
Yeah, and that's what you're going to hope for, is that Muschamp season's a disaster. He's on his way out, and Florida's given up like they did last year. And then you can steal this game. I don't think that's going to be Florida this year, though. I think there is going to be a turnaround. You know, they just – it's – they're the Missouri of last year in some instances where they were just so riddled with injury. You get them healthy. I don't think they're going to compete for the SEC East or the SEC Championship, but I do think they're going to be a better program than they were. Maybe enough to keep to Muschamp's job, like we talked about in the Florida podcast. I think we both said 7-4, Nick. Is that something like – or
yeah,
7-5. 7-5 is, I think, where we both had him coming out. And this is one game we said that Florida was going to be able to squeak by and win and put on that 7 side. So,
and just to back up my opinion a little bit, you kind of bring that in and you give me a little bit of firepower, but there's going to be a lot of external forces and conflicts and things that are going to be playing into Florida's season. I mean, when you've got a coach coaching for his job, there can be two different ways that happens. I mean, you hope that lights a fire under him. You hope that, you know, no pun intended with a hot seat or anything, but you hope that lights a fire under him and they're just ready to do anything that they can do to win, and the team gets behind them and just, you know, wants them to win at any cost. And that could be Florida next year.
It's Florida that I just looked at their schedule. This is okay. Their gauntlet. They've got a bye scattered in here. But after they play Kentucky, they go at Alabama, at Tennessee, LSU, Missouri, Georgia, then Vanderbilt. Right. So their season's determined at that point with Vanderbilt.
I was going to say.
And, you know, from my perspective, I look at that and think, how can anyone survive that without having injuries?
That's a really good point that we didn't even talk about when we looked at the Florida, is what kind of injuries can that kind of gauntlet run. And then if you want to look at it from an East standpoint, after Vanderbilt, they follow it up with playing South Carolina. take a week off, and it's Florida State. It was a hard way. I mean, it was a hard 7 wins in their schedule.
So, I'm beginning to think how we got them to 7 wins after you said that.
I know. That's what I said. I've read that, and it's like, all right, how did they win? How did we give them so many wins? Maybe it was 8-4. Or no, 4-8. Or I don't know. It wasn't 6-6. Who knows? Go back and listen. Go back and listen and tell us what we said.
Yeah.
Do you guys have every SAT as team as bowl eligible this year, just so I'll know?
No. There's one or two.
Did we make Arkansas bowl eligible?
We did not.
Arkansas
it will not be bowl.
We haven't done Kentucky this year. So.
Yeah, we've not done Kentucky, but they will not. I don't think they're going to be bowl eligible. I don't think Tennessee will be bowl eligible. So, but there's a good chance, I think, for 11 teams. Unless you listen to Blair, and Texas A&M is nowhere close to being a good team.
I mean, I think Blair wants Texas A&M to go winless in the SEC this year. So.
Yeah. I think he does too, but that's we'll know more when we talk at Texas A&M in a week or so. So after Florida, you get at Mississippi State.
We get a bye week prior to. On the 15th. November 15th, we've got a bye.
Okay.
November 22nd, we're at Mississippi State in Starkville.
Blair's either got us brainwashed, or we just all really like Mississippi State this year.
And I'm really not sure which one that is.
I don't either. I really don't. But
that's the scary part.
Everybody on this podcast so far has been high on Mississippi State. And for that reason, Dak Prescott just, I think he's the real deal for them. They're going to be an impressive program. I look to them. I don't think they're going to compete for the West, but I think they're going to battle for third place. And that means 9 or 10 wins possibly.
You know, to me, Dak Prescott is the real deal. My question is, how is Mullins going to respond and coach him through this? Because it seems like they always get off to a great start and then fall off. Now, I understand they're playing the SEC West schedule, but going in, it just seems like they always seem to lose a game they shouldn't lose, and they can't seem to get over that hump. Will this year be the year?
The difference, I think, is that, if you listen to Blair talk about it, Dak is really set up to be a Mullins-type quarterback. This is the first time he's had one of his guys that's going to be behind the helm running the show, being able to play the type of quarterback that Mullins likes to coach, the type of quarterback that he liked to coach at Florida. And you saw what he was able to do with the Florida program down there and the success he had. So that's one of the major differences, is that you've got him healthy and you've got him in a system that Mullins likes to run. So, but you're completely right. I mean, they start running like a steamroller, and all of a sudden all the air flies out of them, and they turn around and lose 4 straight. You can run into that with Mississippi State, and is this the year he gets over that hump and gets to those 9 or 10 wins? That's a really good question, and I think that this is the year he does that, and Ole Miss is going to be on the losing end of that when they get down to the Egg Bowl.
Yeah, I agree. And the one thing that Blair did, even though he brainwashed us seemingly, or at least it feels like, that he did point out that there have been expectations, maybe not this great, but in 2008, and there were several other years that we can point back to, and it turns out that Mississippi State couldn't convert on those expectations. So it's kind of risky for us to sit here and say just by history that, it's going to be a great season. They're going to compete for the West maybe and at least finish second or third, maybe slip to that fourth position depending on what LSU does this year. But in my mind, this is a loss for Vanderbilt. But, having the bye before Mississippi State, depending on what happens, going through that gauntlet, 12-game season, having to play the SEC West schedule, anything can happen. But right now, my mind, Mississippi State is going to be that favorite in this game.
So, Nick Thomas, did you give us a win or a loss there?
Well, candidly, I've got a loss in my column, but truly, you never know what kind of injuries we're going to have at this point in the game for either team. We're coming off Florida and a bye week, which gives us a smidge of an advantage on that perspective, but we're going to need it just to have a chance in this game. I've got this down as a loss.
All right. So you're looking at 6-6. Is that what you've got them at?
6-6.
That's what I've got them at, because I'm going to tell everybody that they're going to beat Tennessee. I think Kentucky's going to beat Tennessee. So every year I think Kentucky can beat Tennessee.
I will always pull for Kentucky in that matchup.
I appreciate that. I always will pull for Vanderbilt in that matchup as well.
Hey, thank you. I look at this matchup with Tennessee, to be honest with you, and I think it's a really good matchup for Vanderbilt. I mean, I look at our offensive and defensive lines coming in. We should have the wrinkles out of the 3-4. And you look at the strength of what Tennessee brings to the table. And they're great. They got the wide receiver. They're loaded at wide receiver. They're loaded at running back. But their defense is still suspect from what I'm gathering. Their offensive and defensive line are all, underclassmen. And so there's not a lot of experience.
They're all brand new.
They're all brand new. And so for us, if the SEC is won and lost in the trenches, I think that gives us a significant advantage in this game.
It gives everybody a significant advantage in that game against Tennessee this season. And not to say that Tennessee, those that listen to it are Tennessee fans, that Tennessee is not going to be a better program. But I think they can be like Mississippi State a couple years ago. They might have a better program and still have more losses.
Yeah.
And so,
especially with their schedule.
Yeah, it's a brutal schedule again. For some reason, they forgot how to schedule.
We've certainly learned after our season of losses, no doubt. Those years in the desert.
Now, but I just realized that you currently do not have a new approved SEC approved schedule. You don't have a top five conference opponent this year that's out of conference, do you?
Well, not yet. Those rules just came into play, Shane, so we don't want to put the cart before the horse, especially in this transitionary year.
Well, I was given that to you earlier in earlier podcasts. It's like, well, they always play Wake Forest every year, so even they play a top five program, but then I look at your schedule and you don't have them on the schedule this year.
Well, if you notice, this is the first year we've done that, right? So the November 29th game against Tennessee, historically, that has been the Wake Forest game. And this year, in the November 22nd game, which is always the Saturday before Thanksgiving, that's always been
Kentucky.
The Tennessee game.
No, yeah.
And then the 29th has been Kentucky for Tennessee, right?
No, because it was flip-flopped. We played Vanderbilt, and we would always end the season with Tennessee.
Right, and we would play Tennessee the week before on the
22nd.
Saturday prior to, right. And then on the 29th, we would play Wake Forest.
Right. So the new schedule that they imposed with the rivalries is what made you lose that Wake Forest game.
That's right.
So we'll give you a pass because that was also probably a mandate from Mike Slav as well. So
it probably was. I know that they're in talks with Stanford, Northwestern, and getting them back on the schedule. So we'll see how that plays out.
That Northwestern rivalry was, you had that for a few years. That was a pretty good matchup.
It was a good rivalry. In fact, last year we had Northwestern and we had Wake Forest.
Yeah, so we'll give you that slide. So we're at 6-6. Nick Jones, I didn't ask you. Do you think that Tennessee's going to beat Vanderbilt?
I do not. And this
that's my boy.
SEC SRT history. I don't know how we ever had the full panel agree on a win loss. I don't know.
I don't think we have.
Yeah,
we'll say we haven't. We've done 120 some, almost 130 of these things. We've never agreed all the way through like this.
But
it's because you're both named Nick.
That's true. We had some good, chemistry going today. But seriously, I mean, Tennessee's going to have a lot to rebound from, and I think that another thing is the SEC East is one of at the best point possibly in history and possibly
very well in the last 5 years talent-wise. So Tennessee's going to have a lot to recover from. Like you said, they might be a better team last year, but they may not win any more games and may even drop down a loss or two. But I think it's also kind of fun for me, just as a football fan, having this game during rivalry week, during the time that we see Alabama play Auburn and, some of those games out in the West and stuff. I think it makes it for a fun matchup, and it's bragging rights in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't dislike that, but I really liked ending the season playing Tennessee as a Kentucky fan. We enjoyed that rivalry. I think more than we do the Louisville-Kentucky rivalry because, even though Louisville is a better program than they have been, Kentucky fans just don't consider Louisville their rivals, because there's more Kentucky fans in the city of Louisville than there are Louisville fans in the city of Louisville some days. And so it makes it hard for a Kentucky fan to say, well, they're our rivals. Well, they're in state, but that's about it. So we liked that hatred that we had for the Volunteers and playing that the last SEC or the last week of the season. So
yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Shane, because I know that most UT fans, they say Vandy's not their rival, but Alabama is. And Nick, you can speak to this. What's Tennessee's record against you guys over the last 10 years?
I'm not exactly sure about that. The last five, it really hasn't been competitive, obviously. The last time I looked back at it was the time when Alabama was making a run for the 09 national championship, and Alabama had to rely on a block from two blocks from Terrence Cody to get out of the game. But kind of in my generation, being 20 years old, being a student at the University of Alabama, I remember those games. Alabama had several games where they went to double and triple overtime with Tennessee, but the rivalry in my lifetime, football, watching lifetime at least, just hasn't been there. So it's one of those things that I have to convince myself that it's a big rivalry, but you expect to win every year, which, as much as I hate losing to Auburn, still makes a rivalry fun, I guess you would say, having the chance to lose.
Yeah, and that's the same perspective that the UT fans typically have with Vanderbilt. They'll say Vandy's not our rival, but we've won the last 2 years and three in the last eight. So it's interesting to see the perspectives of the different fan bases.
Good point, guys. All right, anything else we want to say before we wrap up? I think we did a great job covering Vanderbilt. If not, I want to appreciate Nick Jones from Bama Hammer, Nick Thomas. Can anyone find you anywhere? Are you on Twitter or anything like that?
I am Nick Thomas online with no E on the end, at Nick Thomas online.
Perfect. So if you're out there still listening, go find him on Twitter so you can hear him rant about how great Vanderbilt is and how they lost six games, just like we say. But, guys, I appreciate you listening in again. Go subscribe, comment, find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, SECSRT as our Twitter name or anywhere you want to find us, website. And with that, we are going to call this podcast done.